Hey guys, and welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the National Academy of Sports Medicine's Essentials of Personal Fitness Training 5th Edition textbook. We're going over Chapter 3, and my name is Eddie Lester, the founder and CEO of Fitness Mentor. So yeah, let's go ahead and get started looking to page 39 where the start of Chapter 3 begins. Really what Chapter 3 is going to get into is understanding biomechanics. And if you haven't heard this word biomechanics before, biomechanics directly relates to bio, meaning life or living, and the mechanics, which is like the mechanical, we'll say machine-based sort of, we'll say movements in related to the human body. So life, living, mechanics is the way I want you to think of biomechanics. And Chapter 3 is really going to not have a ton of information that makes it onto the test, but it's really crucial to understand a lot of this information for the field. So I'm going to be teaching this chapter in the sense of you understanding how you're going to be applying some of the sciences around biomechanics to working with your clients. And also, guys, biomechanics, there's an entire, we'll say, bachelor's and master's and doctorate programs geared towards understanding biomechanics. So don't be too down on yourself if you can't quite get a grasp of it right away. This took me almost 2 years to fully get a good grasp of, but we're going to be going over it in a simple to understand way and allow you guys to get a good idea of how you're going to be using it with your clients. So let's go ahead and turn to page 40, in which we're going to start to understand some of this information. Also, guys, yeah, remember, this is what I want you guys to really focus on is allow you to listen to this lecture, then go to our study guide, complete the study guide as if it was a homework assignment or just an assignment, and then take your practice test to really make sure that you're getting this information. So also reach out to us if you have any questions on Facebook at Fitness Mentors LLC or on Instagram at Fitness Mentors. And yeah, let's go ahead and get started. All right, so looking at page 40, we want to understand just a little bit about, yeah, it's just going to intro biomechanics. What is biomechanics? The way that they describe it is the study of how forces affect a living body, meaning just understanding forces in nature. Mainly we're dealing with gravity and how the gravity might affect your body, we'll say through movements related to, yeah, just movements in general, not necessarily in fitness. We do move a lot in fitness, so there you go. Also kinesiology. Kinesiology is something that's closely tied with biomechanics in the sense that kinesiology is the study of human movement. Kines is basically going to be referred to movement, and then ology obviously means the study of. Just to kind of understand kinesiology a little bit, kinesiology is really just about understanding everything that you need to know about how the body moves, what muscles work, how the muscles get activated to turn on, and then how the muscles then pull on bones to create these levers that then create this movement. There's a ton of terms that we're going to get into, so let's go ahead and just get started as we move over to page 41. They're going to talk a little bit about something called a ground reaction force, which basically just is referring to during any like running activity or walking activity or even just you standing here, the ground has a force pushing back up on your feet as much as you are pushing down via gravity. So basically, any time that we move, we typically are interacting with the ground, and that ground is equally pushing right back on us, which is one of Newton's laws of gravity. So all right, let's go ahead and get into anatomic locations. Anatomic locations is actually really important because understanding a little bit about directional terminology in the sense of describing the body is going to be important because you would use it in the field as well as NASM typically does like to use throw in these words on the test, so it is good to be familiar with these. Let's go ahead and get started by looking at figure 3.1 at the bottom of page 41. I'll just go ahead and list a few and kind of describe them. Obviously, you can kind of see the directional arrows in which will help you to understand this, but the first one is going to be lateral or medial, so lateral referring to the side of the body, medial referring to the midline of the body. As that guy on the left is standing right there. And then also the midline of the body is literally dissecting him from right and left halves, going right down the center of his body. That can be called the midline. Then we're looking at, let's go to superior and inferior on the man to the right. Sometimes they call it cranial or caudal. That's really more medical terminology, and you would only really hear that if you were speaking to a doctor or certain things like that. So don't worry about understanding cranial, but cranial means head, and caudal means tail, meaning or towards the bottom of the spine. Superior means up or above towards the head. Inferior means down towards the feet. Regardless of the body position that you're in, you always refer to the top of the towards the head as superior, and the inferior portion would be towards the feet. Also notice, guys, he is standing in a very specific, we'll say, position, which if you notice, his hands are going to be, palms are facing forward, feet are going to be pointed straight ahead, about hip-width apart. This position is called anatomic position. And you do need to know this because whenever you're referring to the body, you have to refer to the body in this position. Okay, so notice how the, we'll say the left hand of this guy, which is right above that word contralateral, that is his left hand. You notice how the thumb is going to be lateral to the pinky in that photo. Sometimes NASM gets a little tricky and says, you know, is the thumb lateral to the pinky? And you need to understand that, yes, because when you refer to the body, you refer to it in anatomical position, and anatomical position shows that the pinky is, we'll say, medial to the thumb, or the thumb is lateral to the pinky. Whenever NASM might ask a question, it might be something around understanding the difference, or the different directional terminologies, like in this picture right here. So understanding that the, you know, maybe the sternum is anterior to the spine. Sternum is going to be the breastbone. Spine is obviously your spine in the back. Understanding the way that you would speak and say that might be something that is important for the actual exam. But yeah, the last ones that we missed, or the second to last ones we missed, were anterior and posterior. Anterior meaning to the front. Anterior and posterior meaning to the back, like post, like beyond, behind. Proximal and distal also show up quite often on the test. NASM's like, oh, well, let's pick one that they don't often look at. Proximal and distal is kind of hidden in the guy's body on the right. But proximal typically refers to a limb, which is like the whole arm or a whole leg. Proximal means it's closer to the origin of that limb, and distal means that it's further away from the origin of the limb. So the origin of the arm is going to be the shoulder joint. That's basically where the most proximal point of the arm, or the closest to the body point of the arm, proximal, is the shoulder. And then we'll say the tip of the middle finger might be the most distal point of the arm or of the limb. Specifically. So understanding those that proximal and distal is going to be important. I definitely want you guys to highlight that and understand it. All right, moving along to page 42. We're going to get into, just a few more directional terminologies. I pointed them out for the most part on the last page, so we don't need to go over them too much as it's just going to list. But anterior front, posterior back, superior above, inferior below. Inferior typically is going to be used on the test in some wording, so definitely understand inferior as well. Specifically when we're talking about where the, we'll say, knee is in relation to the hip, you have to understand that the knee is inferior to the hip, something like that. Then also we have proximal and distal. Definitely know those two. Remember, it typically refers to a limb, for instance, the leg. We want to understand that the, you know, the ankle is going to be distal to the hip, in the sense of distal and proximal and directional terminology. So then we have medial and lateral. That's towards the midline or away from the midline of the body. That, remember that midline that you have. And then we also have the contralateral and ipsilateral. So we didn't go over that on the last page. Contralateral is going to be referring to the opposite side. Ipsilateral is going to be referring to the same side. That means contralateral would be something like, if we're talking about my right hand, my contralateral shoulder would be my left shoulder. Okay, if I'm referring to my right hand, my ipsilateral shoulder would be my right shoulder. So basically, if you're referring to the same side of the body, you would refer to your ipsilateral whatever body part. So you're talking about your right ankle, your ipsilateral knee would be that same right side. Knee, ipsilateral, same side. Contra meaning opposite. Contralateral literally means opposite side of what you're referring to. So you could say the left hand is contralateral to the right hand or right shoulder, something like that. That's the way they may use it in a sentence. All right, so next we're going to get into planes of motion and then axes of motion. So, guys, it may take you a while to understand planes of motion, okay? It's not something that comes typically right away, but if it does, that's awesome because it will be helping you kind of move along. NASM does like to talk about the planes of motion because it's important. When NASM talks about training, they don't want you only doing one plane of motion. And that's really important just for all personal training in general, because a lot of people think about, you know, your squats, your lunges, your, we'll say your shoulder press, or we'll say basically stuff, a lot of stuff that occurs in one plane of motion. Your elbow flexion, your elbow extension, basically this front to back sort of thing, which is called the sagittal plane, which sagittal plane is defined as the line that bisects the body into equal halves, meaning left and right halves. So it kind of goes right down the midline of the body and would divide the body into right and left halves. So the sagittal plane, guys, is where you see your squats, where you see your lunges, and NASM kind of has this sort of idea that most training and most human movement occurs in the sagittal plane. So a lot of people, when they do their training, typically train in that sagittal plane, and they typically neglect the frontal plane and transverse plane. The frontal plane is going to divide the body into front and back halves. I mean, he's going to bisect the body. If you look at figure 3.2, you can kind of see how the frontal plane is basically dividing the body into right and left half, or sorry, into front and back halves, meaning the nose would be on one side of the frontal plane and the back of the head would be on the other side of the frontal plane. That literally means it cuts you from front to back, anterior to posterior. So that's the frontal plane. And the frontal plane movements occur basically laterally. So you can imagine lifting your arm out to the right side. That's going to be a frontal plane movement, or moving, literally shuffling from right to left, or like an ice skater where you're jumping from left to right, is going to be very frontal plane movement based. And so NASM's kind of saying that, you know, typically most people just train in the sagittal plane often. So they want you to understand the planes of motion because they want you to be able to create a fitness program, trains in all planes of motion so that nothing is neglected. Therefore, you reduce the risk of injury when people go play sports or do recreational activities. All right, so let's go over the transverse plane, which is the only one we missed. Now, the transverse plane is going to be the line that divides the body into top and bottom halves, meaning that when you put your arms out to the side, right and left side, and then you rotate, you can imagine that the line that your arms create as you rotate with your arms straight out to the side, like a helicopter, that rotation of like the blades, that would be an example of the transverse plane, which typically has the movement of rotation based around it. Okay, so basically what NASM's saying is that you need to not only do like squatting and sagittal plane motions, but you also need to do frontal plane motions, which is moving from right to left. And then you also need to do rotational movements, which is that transverse plane. That creates an entirely complete, we'll say, movement patterns for human beings, meaning that you shouldn't neglect any of those planes in your training. All right. So understanding the axis associated with the planes is going to be pretty important too. NASM might, you know, ask you about some of the axes in relation to the frontal plane. And what the axis means is it's referring to the axis of rotation, which is associated with the plane. So let's go back to the helicopter example. And let's put our arms out to the side, and then let's move our body, rotate our body like a helicopter would, in the sense that your arms are the blades. Where is the center point of that movement? Where is the axis from which that movement occurs? And if you were to rotate your body, stand up, and do a circle, just rotating around, you can imagine that like a ballerina, you could stick a pole straight through the head of the person, and through the middle of the body, and they would be rotating around that pole, in a sense. So if you think of the helicopter example, the center of the rotors or of the blades all the way in the center, that is going to be the axis of rotation, which the axis of rotation runs perpendicular to the plane. Perpendicular just means at a T. It basically would intersect it at a 90 degree angle. of the plane. So if you see figure 3.2, that vertical longitudinal axis is associated with a transverse plane. You can imagine that guy doing rotation around that longitudinal axis, which you see in figure 3.2 on page 43, and he would be rotating in a circle. So guys, I'm getting pretty into detail about the planes and axes and stuff. If you already understand this, you can skip ahead a little bit, but I'm going to continue to explain this because a lot of people do tend to have a little bit more trouble. So then let's go to something like the frontal plane. So the frontal plane has the anterior posterior axis associated with it. Remember, the axis that they're referring to is the rotation that occurs during the movement. So now let's put our arm by our side, and I want you guys to lift your arm laterally or to the side up in the sense of this is called shoulder abduction. So you can imagine that you're standing in front of a mirror, arms are at your side, and then you lift your arm like a bird would fly or to the right or to the left. That is a frontal plane movement, and if you were to stick an axis perpendicular to that plane, the axis would come directly from the front or anterior of your body and go towards the back or posterior of your body. So you can imagine having a fan. We'll say a fan's blowing on you, like right in front of you. That fan is vertical and it's rotating. We'll say in the frontal plane, in association to your body, meaning it's if you tip the helicopter on its side, or you can imagine just a fan. The center of that fan is going to be the axis from which those blades are rotating. That fan is vertical, just like your computer screen might be right now. And you can imagine the center of that computer screen, if you were to stick, or a fan, center of the fan, if you'd stick a pencil right in the center of it, you can imagine rotating that fan around that pencil. That is going to be the axis of rotation for the frontal plane, which is called the anterior posterior axis. And on page 44, you're going to have a little table 3.1, which explains this a little bit further. But I just want you guys to get the mindset of what each of these axes and or the relationship between the planes and the axes. So, and then the third and final axis is going to be the axis associated with the sagittal plane. Okay, so the sagittal plane, they're going to refer to that as the coronal axis. It can also be called the medial lateral axis, which is a little bit easier to understand in my opinion because it runs from lateral to the body to medial or medial of the body to lateral. So to look at that, if you were to put this now fan to the right of you and have the fan blowing on you from your right side, okay, the way that fan is spinning is going to be the sagittal plane, meaning dividing the body into right and left halves. And then the way that axis is in reference to the fan, if you were to put a pencil to the right and in the middle of that fan, notice how it would be running from the medial of your body, from the midline towards the center of your chest, to the right towards the shoulder or left towards the shoulder. And the way that pencil is going to be turned is basically going to be the axis of that rotation. All right, so hopefully that helped you guys to understand a little bit more about how the axes and the planes work together. The reason why you need to understand the axes is because that is the way that your joints are actually rotating as you do movements in those planes. Okay, so it's not, you're almost never going to talk about this with your clients. You will talk about planes of motion with your clients, but the axial rotation is not something you typically talk about. But understanding it can be pretty important, especially for the test. So hopefully you guys are kind of getting a better idea of what that is. So I spent a good amount of time on that, but you can always reach out to us if you have any specific questions around that, and we could hopefully help to explain it a little bit further. All right, so looking at, let's go over to that chart or that table on page 44, table 3.1. Sagittal plane is associated with the medial lateral axis or the coronal axis. They may use both on the test, which is kind of mean, but you do have to memorize both of those. So the examples of the movements. So we're now going to get into the human movements associated with each plane of motion. And then obviously each plane of motion is associated with an axis. Okay, so as you look at the sagittal plane, once again, that sagittal plane divides the body into right and left halves. And the axis is going to be the medial lateral axis, meaning the axis runs from right to left in the body. And then the examples of the joint movements. So we haven't gotten into this too closely yet, but flexion and extension. So you could imagine that your arms are by your side, and then you're going to do a bicep curl. or you're going to curl your elbow or bend your elbow to where your wrist comes closer to your chest or your wrist comes closer to your shoulder. That motion right there occurs in the sagittal plane, about the medial lateral axis, meaning that axis would be like the pen going through the middle of your elbow from right to left. And an example of that joint movement of this flexion or extension, or the flexion would be the bicep curl. So the bicep curl literally is elbow flexion. And whenever we refer to movements of the body, you refer to them as the joint first, such as elbow, and then the actual motion, which is going to be the flexion. So elbow flexion. That would be a bicep curl that occurs in the sagittal plane about the medial lateral axis. Okay, once again, that is elbow flexion. Elbow extension would be, so let's say you're in this position, that curl position at the top of the curl, and then you slowly let your elbow down back to the starting position in that bicep curl. That is going to be extension of the elbow. Okay, so the elbow is then opening up to go back to a straight arm or straight elbow, and that downward motion is called extension of the elbow. That would be something like a tricep extension. If you were to jump on a cable pulley machine and you extend your elbow downward in a tricep extension, or a skull crusher if you've heard of that, in which you're bending the elbow upwards with resistance on the tricep muscle, that is going to be a sagittal plane exercise. Also, another example of exercise is like the squat. When you go to sit down in a chair, that knee and those hips are going to be bending to allow you to get into that chair. That is a sagittal plane exercise. Why? Because the knee and the hip are moving in, we'll say, front to back or flexion extension ways. Okay, also a calf raise, and then also running. So running, walking, all that, when you're running or walking, obviously straight ahead, that's moving forward. Sagittal plane typically moves front to back, anterior to posterior. So that running and walking is going to be associated with sagittal plane. So once again, guys, most people typically tend to train just in the sagittal plane, and they forget about the frontal and transverse movements. So keep that in mind when you're building your fitness routines in the future, is that it is important, especially as an athlete, to include certain things like lateral motions and rotational movements in order to, we'll say, build a complete program for your fitness and, yeah, athleticism. So, okay, now let's go into table 3.1, but then talk about the frontal plane. The frontal plane is going to be associated with the anterior posterior axis. So the frontal plane cuts the body into front and back halves and runs, we'll say, maybe from right to left, medial to lateral. And a motion would be, once again, remember we have your arms at your side, and then you do a lateral arm raise or fly like a bird, okay, up and down to the right and left. That movement is called abduction and adduction. Abduction means you're taking it away from the body, to abduct, to take away. That's the way that I typically remember that. And then adduction, ADDduction, which is right in the middle there of that examples of joint movements on table 3.1. Adduction is going to be where you add the arm back towards the body, or move it back towards the body. That's the way that I typically remember that. Abduct is to take away, and then adduct is to add back to the body. So abduction and adduction is in the frontal plane. You also have lateral flexion. You can imagine you're standing vertically, and then you're going to lean over to the side, moving in the frontal plane. So moving laterally, just lean your spine over to the side, or take your neck and try to touch your ear to your shoulder by moving your neck. That is going to be lateral flexion. Then you also have eversion and inversion. We're going to get into those when we move over towards the pictures, because that one's a little bit harder to explain, but it's basically the ankle moving to the right or the ankle moving to the left in the frontal plane. So examples of exercises in the frontal plane, you have your lateral arm raise, which we talked about. We have your side step, so literally like tube walking or stepping from right to left, but moving facing forward and stepping right, or a side lunge, which is where you're standing forward and then you step to the right and lunge to the right, but still facing forward. And then you also have a side shuffle, something like in a lateral movement that maybe a goalie might use when they're protecting a goal in soccer. You're basically moving from right to left to protect that goal, but you typically face forward, so side shuffling would be from right to left. Hopefully that helps to understand the frontal plane a little bit more. Then you have the transverse plane. All right, guys, the transverse plane is associated with the longitudinal axis. That's typically the only word they use to describe that axis. That axis, like, remember, like the ballerina, that axis promotes rotation. And you're rotating the body, or like a figure skater in a when they're spinning, that where they're basically moving around a vertical axis or a longitudinal axis up and down, is going to be what is associated with that transverse plane. Examples of the joint motions. If you ever see anything with nation, okay, or ation, which is like any rotation movement. So you have pronation, supination, internal rotation, external rotation, spinal rotation, just rotation in general. You know that that is associated with the transverse plane. The only two others that don't have that ation associated with it is horizontal adduction and horizontal abduction, which we'll talk about as we get into the next few pages because it's a little harder to describe. But it's basically like a chest fly or a rear delt fly in which you move your arms like a helicopter, but just your arms moving. Okay, so examples of exercises that are associated in the transverse plane would be something like a trunk rotation, something like when you're doing a Russian twist, where you move a medicine ball from right to left in a crunch position. That rotation is going to be in the transverse plane. We'll say swinging a baseball bat or swinging a golf club, where you rotate, or a rotational medicine ball throw. That's going to be rotation in the transverse plane. Okay, and that's all about the longitudinal axis. All right. Hopefully that helps even further to understand the planes of motion. But now we're going to get into specific joint motions associated with each plane. Okay, so you guys, it's really important to understand the joint motions because this is what fitness is. Fitness is just a bunch of joint motions. And when you move, understanding the way that these joints move will assist you in building a program. And I'm sure you guys already understand this in some sort of way, but let's go ahead and get into a little bit more of the biomechanical aspect of these joint motions, okay? So it says, page 44, right in the middle there at the bottom, naming conventions for joint movements. First it describes range of motion, which is basically the available movement angle of each joint, or in the sense they say the amount of movement that's able to be produced in the range of motion. So let's say you take your wrist and you want to extend your wrist or lift your wrist up to get the knuckles to try to touch the forearm. The available range of motion should be about to 90 degrees. Males maybe a little bit less. Females you can probably get all the way to that 90 degrees. But then if you go forward or flex the wrist, which you we'll say like throw a ball or your wrist ends up forward, that's going to be basically your wrist flexion, and that should be almost about 90 degrees as well. So the available range of motion in a joint is called the range of motion. Typically, guys, you want to go through a full range of motion with almost every single exercise. Obviously, some things might be contraindicated if they have injuries or certain things like that. But it's really important to understand that going through a full range of motion is going to optimize the ability of the muscle to move that joint fully. Okay, but let's go ahead and go into the sagittal plane motions at the bottom of page 44. So we have different joints throughout our body. The typical ones that we think of are something like shoulders, elbows, hips, knees, ankles. Those are going to be the main ones that we typically think about when we think of fitness. There are other joints that do produce movement, which we will get into, but let's go over the basic movements for each of these major joints. Okay. So first one we're going to talk about is just flexion. Okay. The flexion exercises and the extension exercises are going to be all based on the sagittal plane, which it says right at the bottom of page 44. So all of these exercises on page 45 are going to be considered flexion. Okay, so flexion, the first one at the top is ankle flexion, which is going to be where you, basically called dorsiflexion versus plantar flexion. Okay, so even though it says dorsiflexion and plantar flexion, one is actually considered ankle extension, and one is considered ankle flexion, okay? But they just named it dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. It's just a little bit tough to understand, but ankle flexion and ankle extension. The ankle flexion is going to be A, in which the toes come closer to the shin. Ankle extension is going to be B, which is on page 45, the top little picture there. Ankle extension is going to be B, or plantar flexion. You guys need to know it as plantar flexion. So pointing your toe, or when you jump at the top of that jump, or running when you push off of that toe, that's called plantar flexion, in which you're using the calf muscle or the gastrocnemius and soleus to promote that plantar flexion. But we'll get into that further down the road. All right, figure 3.3, that dorsiflexion, plantar flexion. Figure 3.4, we're talking about the movements of the hip. Okay, so A, the girl in figure A, page number 45, once again, is she's extending her hip backwards. Notice how her knee's not bent. We're focusing on the hip in this one. A is hip extension. She's moving that hip backwards. Okay, and technically that's hip hyperextension, but just know it, anytime the hip moves backwards, that is going to be hip extension. Okay, or they might even call it thigh extension sometimes, which is basically the thigh moving backwards or towards the posterior. The next one we have is B. That is called hip flexion. Notice how her hips are then bending forward. The joint that they're focusing on right there is the hip, and that hip is bending forward, and that is called hip flexion. So B, hip extension versus hip flexion. Hip flexion can also be if that lady in figure A was to bring her, we'll say, hip forward, where that back leg moves forward in front of the planted foot and comes to that same position that she would be in, almost like a standing, we'll say, where you have the leg straight out in front of you, like a hamstring stretch almost. That would also be considered hip flexion. They only show, which is actually C. So that hip flexion, there you go, in C is where she brought that foot now forward, or that hip now forward, and that's also hip flexion too. You guys need to understand that both of those are hip flexion, but the way that you move, whether it be the open end of the body, that the trunk coming forward, or the planted end, the leg swinging forward, is both hip flexion. All right, then we go into D and E, which is going to be knee extension and knee flexion. So specifically, knee extension, which is D, is her basically extending the knee from that bent position. So let's look at E first. E has the knee bent. Okay, that is knee flexion. When she slowly lowers that foot back towards the ground, that is going to be considered knee extension. Okay, those are all sagittal plane movements. Flexion and extension occur in the sagittal plane. Okay, it's important to understand. All right, moving on to page 46. You have spinal extension and spinal flexion. Okay, it also might be called trunk flexion or trunk extension, but yes, spinal is referring to the intervertebral joints, meaning that the spine is flexing or the vertebrae are flexing and the spine is extending. Okay, so arching the back is obviously going to be spinal extension. See how A, she's like leaning back and then arching that whole, we'll say, trunk. That is going to be spinal extension. Spinal flexion is almost is a crunch. When you do a crunching exercise and you bring that spine forward, that is going to be spinal flexion. All right, those are still in the sagittal plane. Next, moving on to figure 3.6, the bottom page 46. We have upper extremity, which is the shoulder. Okay, we have shoulder flexion, which is A. So shoulder flexion is bringing the shoulder forward and above the head. When it moves forward and goes all the way to above the head, that is considered shoulder flexion. Shoulder extension is when the arm comes from that A position, which is on page 46, bottom left, A position, and ends up going down towards the hips in the, we'll say, shoulder extension position, which is then to B. Okay, that process of moving that downward and away from the face would be that shoulder extension. All right, then moving into number C, which is going to be elbow extension. So we start by looking at elbow extension with D. D is going to be elbow flexion. Her elbow is bent. Remember that bicep curl, bicep curl exercise. She is bringing the hand closer to the face in that position, and that is considered flexing the elbow. When she extends the elbow or moves the elbow away from her face back towards that parallel position, that is going to be elbow extension. All right, guys, now getting into top right, page 47, we have cervical flexion, cervical extension. NASM does bring in the cervical vertebrae as a joint, and typically you should understand that. So cervical flexion is going to be A, in which you bring the head or neck, we'll say bend the neck forward, bring the chin to the chest. And then cervical extension is going to be where you look up, in which you're bringing, looking your eyes slowly upward, or bring your neck to have the face facing upwards, in which the cervix or cervical is extending. All right. Other things that do flexion and extension, you have your toes, you have your fingers, you have your ankle. Those are other flexion and extension. NASM doesn't typically focus too much on the, we'll say digits or your fingers or knuckle joints, metatarsal phalangeal joints. Those are going to be less important, but understand that the fingers can flex metacarpal phalangeal flexion, metacarpal phalangeal extension, and then, interphalangeal flexion. All the knuckles, all the joints in those fingers can flex and extend. Can't rotate, though, unless that would be pretty cool if it could. All right. Moving into the frontal plane movements on the bottom of page 47 and then over to page 48. Flexion extension, you need to understand that, associated with the sagittal plane. Now we're getting to the frontal plane movements. Remember from that chart back a few pages on page 44, 3.1, the frontal plane has a different set of joint motions. Let's get into those. Looking at page 48. Right at page 48, we have these joint motions that occur in the frontal plane. First one, A and B, figure 3.8, is going to be eversion and inversion. So your ankle can, we'll say, move in the frontal plane to the right and move in the frontal plane to the left. Okay, eversion and inversion is what that is called. The reason why NASM wants you to understand what eversion and inversion are is basically because during a squat, a lot of times people might have inverted feet, which is A on the top left of page 48. That means that the feet collapse. You go to flat-footedness. It's also called a pronation of the feet and associated with improper posture and potential injuries of the knees and hips, low back, that sort of thing. So you need to understand inversion very well because that's pronated feet, flat feet, which can be affected or affect the squat and affect someone's, we'll say, pain during a squat, that sort of thing. Eversion is where eversion is A, and inversion is going to be B. That is called eversion is associated with pronation. My apologies. And then inversion is going to be where that foot comes inward towards the midline. Eversion where the foot goes outward towards laterally. All right. Now we're looking at page 48, figure 3.9, hip abduction and hip adduction. That's basically you're standing and the hip goes laterally, which is going to be abduction. Remember how we talked about abducting or taking away? When the hip goes lateral, that is abduction, okay? When the hip goes towards the midline of the body or comes back from that abducted state to the adduction state or back towards the midline of the body, that is hip adduction. Abduction, A and B. A is abduction, B is adduction, adding it back to the midline. All right, then you have lateral flexion. Once again, that's you're seated in your chair, you're standing right now. If you laterally flex, that's in the frontal plane, moving from right to left. That is a spinal lateral flexion, they may call that. Also, if you look just to the right of that, figure 3.12 on page 49, that is cervical lateral flexion, lateral flexion of the neck. So those two are pretty similar. One is just the we'll say lumbar spine, one is the cervical spine, meaning the neck. Then we look at the bottom left, page 48, figure 3.11 or 3.11. You have abduction of the shoulder and then adduction of the shoulder. Abduction of the shoulder is taking away, having that arm come from your side and move away to the right or to her left like she's showing you on page 48, figure A. And then B is where she brings that arm back by her side. So the movement heading from that abducted state, moving back towards the body or lowering back towards the body, is going to be adduction. Also, guys, then you have shoulder elevation and shoulder depression. That's technically the wrong term. It should be scapular elevation versus scapular depression. The shoulder joint is considered the ball and socket joint, which doesn't have the ability to elevate or depress. The shoulder blades do. No big deal. Look at, so that is scapular elevation, which you shrug your shoulders. Scapular depression, which is down, heading down, is going to be where your scapula literally slides back down into place or depresses. Just a way to remember that is shoulder elevation is up, elevate, depress, down, okay? That'll help you with that one. So those are all frontal plane movements in which, it is really important to understand abduction, adduction. That one comes up all over the test as far as the term goes. Typically when they refer to adduction, they refer to adducted knees during a squat, meaning the knees are caving inward, which is bad posture. You need to understand the muscles associated with that bad posture and how to fix it. That's going to be not till chapter 9 when we understand posture. So wait up on that. All right, then we have the transverse plane of motion, which is going to page 49, bottom right. Remember, any rotation is going to be transverse plane movements. So transverse plane motions is going to be internal rotation, external rotation, and then you have, they say pronation and supination, which is going to be mainly referring to the wrist. When you turn the wrist from front to back, like let's say you have your arm extended all the way by your side, and then you go palms out, and then you go palms down, basically that is going to be pronation and supination, where you have that wrist, it's called the radial ulnar joint, but palms forward, or palm up and palm down, like in a bicep curl, when you go palm up, that is called supination, and then palm down is pronation, which it'll probably show on the next page. So let's go ahead and look at that, page 50, moving right along. All right, so, internal and external rotation of the hip is A and B. A and B, if you notice, her toe is, the movement is occurring at the hip, but they're showing it by moving her toe points in different directions. Since her leg is straight, that is hip moving, and that is where the A is internal rotation, where the toe comes more towards the midline of the body, and then B is hip external rotation, which is going away from the midline of the body, kind of going outward. Good. Then C is going to be supination, and then D is going to be pronation. Notice one C is palms up. Some people look at that as or memorize that by saying holding a can of soup is supination. You wouldn't hold a can of soup on the back of your hand. You would obviously hold the can of soup by have it going palm up, so supination, C, and then this is on page 50, and then pronation is D, in which you move the hand downward, okay, or face the palm downward. That motion of turning it over is called pronation. So then we have look to E for internal and external rotation of the shoulder, okay? So E is where she is going to be externally rotating the shoulder. Her elbow is bent just to show you that what occurs during external rotation of the shoulder and internal rotation of the shoulder. Okay, so that movement outward or away from the midline of the body is external rotation. That's E. That movement inward is F, where it goes right towards the midline of the body. And remember, that motion is happening at the shoulder. Don't look at the elbow, even though the elbow is what's kind of moving. You can imagine... trying to get into anatomical position, your hands at your sides, you externally rotate your shoulders as far as you possibly can to where those thumbs are now facing outward. All right, then you have G and H. So this is that horizontal abduction and horizontal adduction, okay? So a chest fly, let's say you're doing a standing chest fly with a cable machine, and you bring those hands from a wide position and go inward. That is horizontal adduction, where you're adding you're touching the hands together, moving in that, we'll say, helicopter-like way, in which you bring that arm out or towards the midline of the body in that horizontal way, which is basically the transverse plane. That is horizontal adduction, where she's clapping in H. Horizontal abduction is like, hey, give me a hug, opening wide out to where those arms are moving outward in that horizontal position, which she's ready for a nice big hug. All right. Then we move to I, which is going to be just spinal rotation, and then J is going to be cervical rotation it's referring to, moving right or left. You don't have to say right spinal right rotation or spinal left rotation or anything like that. It's just rotation, spinal rotation, and then cervical spine rotation, and they may just call that cervical rotation. And then K and L are referring to the way that you have protraction and retraction of the shoulder blades, okay? That's a scapular protraction and scapular retraction. The shoulders don't protract, the shoulder joint does not protract, and the shoulder joint does not retract. That is the scapula. But I think just for, keeping everything kind of on an even keel, They're referring to the shoulder because that's what you guys will see moving. But the scapula is actually what is doing the movement, in which the scapula slides forward on the ribcage and then slides backward on the ribcage. That rotation, small rotation of the scapula, is where we'll say transverse plane movement occurs. Hopefully that makes sense. Try it if you can. Round the shoulders as much as you can, and then squeeze the shoulder blades together as much as you can. You can imagine that your scapulas are kind of rotating as that happens. All right, guys, let's take a small break. We're about halfway through this chapter, maybe a little bit less. A lot more to go. Just going to take a small break and get started on page 51 as soon as we're back.